Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 18th. All this week, commentators were saying something like the following when it came to the issue of Greece and Europe's debt crisis. We've been here before, like last year. True, but how many a year ago were telling you what the future held as I did? Now the following is a bit self-serving, and I have even more details in my Week in Review column at stocksnews.com. But for starters, back on May 15th of last year, I wrote, "The bottom line is the harsh austerity programs now being implemented are obviously not a recipe for growth, which also means that for a time, government revenues will shrink further and deficits increase until the likes of Greece hit bottom." I wrote on June 5th of last year, "We have a long, long way to go before we'll know if Europe can get its house in order. These are incredibly wrenching changes governments must implement, and you'd have to be an idiot to think the people will just take it all lying down, even though that would be totally appropriate given the binge they've been on. Say of a European continent that could be stuck in neutral at best for years, nay, decades." I wrote last August 21st, again, 2010. "This week, interest rates on Greek bonds soared amidst new concerns. The European Central Bank may be pleased with Greece's austerity program as the government cut its budget deficit, but revenues are below projection, unemployment could soar further, and just weeks after resolution to the crisis here, what do you know, there is more uncertainty again. It's all so predictable, yet I'm amazed how many are missing it. These austerity programs are incredibly painful, though necessary. We're talking lost jobs, cuts in public sector wages, if you don't lose your job, and cuts in benefits. It's going to be one very depressed continent once this all settles in. Europe has been in a perpetual state of denial, and it's time to pay the piper, as it increasingly is in the United States, where it's virtually 50 states in denial. You are nuts if you are bullish on Europe in the short term." So that's what I was writing May through August of 2010. January 1st of this year, I wrote, "I believe the European debt crisis is with us well into 2012, and I can guarantee you that Ireland's role is far from over, its bailout and recovery far from secure. I also believe that not enough has been said on the transparency issue and European banks' lack of same." So this week, Mohamed El Arian of PIMCO had an op-ed in the Financial Times where he wrote, quote, "It is now commonly accepted that Greece's predicament is due to two interrelated problems. The economy is unable to grow and the debt burden is enormous. Yet neither is influenced sufficiently. The approach that has been adopted by the Crisis Management Coalition, consisting of the Greek government, its European creditors, namely other Eurozone governments, the European Commission and European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. Instead, the focus has been on dramatic austerity for Greece and massive loans from the official creditors. Not surprisingly, every economic, financial, and social indicator for the Greek economy has deteriorated. This has happened both in absolute terms and, more alarmingly, relative to the coalition's already grim expectations. Such failure naturally encourages a blame game, and sadly, that is exactly what is now happening. Judging from other crisis management episodes around the world, it is normal for both the Greek government and its people to feel let down by European neighbors who they feel underappreciate the sacrifices made by its population, especially since these same creditors refuse to lower interest rates on new loans. Equally, it is normal for the creditors to complain that it is Greece that is not doing enough to counter what is, after all, a homegrown problem." El Arian continues, "Europe needs to recognize it faces a moment of truth. The sooner this is recognized, the greater chance of shifting to a plan B. If not, the prospects are stark. The already difficult outlook facing the three bailout countries, Greece, Ireland, and Portugal, will surely be compounded by a decade of internal economic implosion. The task must now be to limit fundamental contagion to countries that are yet to be bailed out, notably Spain, and to maintain the integrity of the euro. But the time for action is fast running out." Again, that was Mohamed El Arian of PIMCO in the Financial Times. And so this weekend it is expected that the new government that Greek Prime Minister Papandreou has put together will pass yet another round of spending cuts and other concessions in order to secure the release of emergency loans from the IMF, 12 billion euros, so Greece can make interest payments on its debts and avoid a default no one on the continent and here wants to see. As protests grew in Athens, all the talk was about a credit event and what would then be a cascading spiral of events into the depths of depression, because a global economy cannot afford another financial crisis a la 2008-09. With the exposure the French and German banks have to Greece and the other sick puppies of the Eurozone, you'd have a continent-wide run on the bank, whether warranted or not. The thing is, as I noted a few weeks ago, all the European Central Bank, EU, and IMF are doing is perpetuating a Ponzi scheme. What the continent needs more than anything these days is growth. And with few exceptions, there is nowhere near enough of it to staunch the fear. But at least France and Germany reached agreement on the issue of private investors being protected for now, and so Greece could survive to live another day, maybe four, but not much more than that. I mean, imagine, there was a time this week when the interest rate on a two-year Greek note was 30%. The benchmark 10-year had a yield close to 19% before ending the week around 18%. So now we await further developments ahead of next week's EU summit. Turning to the United States, I got a kick out of some of President Barack Obama's comments last Saturday in his weekly radio address. Quote, "The truth is we didn't get into this mess overnight and we won't get out of it overnight. It's going to take time." Well, my memory isn't as good as it used to be, but I recall Mr. Obama took the oath of office in January 2009 and it's now June 2011. No doubt the president inherited a pile of merd. But by the spring of 09, wasn't he talking of a vastly improved economy by 2010? And aren't we now midway through 2011? But why are some surprised? He wasn't a job creator before he got into politics. He was a social worker, a community leader. I mean, come on. But we're a long ways from November 2012, and maybe after this soft patch economists say we're in the midst of, things will improve in the fall, and by a year from now, we'll all be singing zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day, zippity-ay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day. Then again, maybe not. Our president is flailing, hopelessly, these days. But to be fair, so are a lot of other world leaders. Meanwhile, the IMF cut its forecast for U.S. growth this year to 2.5%, with 2012 looking only slightly better, 2.7%. Stephen Roach, Financial Times. "The global economy is being hobbled by a new generation of zombies, the economic walking dead. American consumers are in the early stages of an unprecedented retrenchment. In the 13 quarters since the beginning of 2008, inflation-adjusted annualized growth in consumption has averaged just 0.5%. Never before in the post-war era have U.S. consumers been this weak for this long. The zombie syndrome has an important antecedent. It was, in fact, a key symptom of the Japan disease, which led to the first of two lost decades for that country. Encouraged by the government, Japanese banks kept extending credit lines for a broad cross-section of insolvent companies, postponing restructuring and inevitable failure. Japanese productivity growth weakened dramatically as a result of the ensuing zombie congestion. The lifeline of policy-driven bank lending allowed bankrupt companies to hang on to excess and redundant capacity. But that sapped post-bubble Japan of sorely needed vitality." Stephen Roach continues, "It is comparable in post-bubble America. After record-buying binge that lasted a dozen years, U.S. consumers were stretched as never before. Consumption excesses were built on the precarious foundation of two bubbles, property and credit, which have now burst. It will take a long time for American consumers to recover from the ravages of this bubble-induced spending binge. Deleveraging, the paying down of excess debt, has barely begun. Yes, household sector debt came down to 115% of disposable personal income in early 2011, while that is 15 percentage points below the peak ratio of 130% hit in 2007, it remains well above the 75% average of the 1970 to 2000 period. Roach concludes, sadly, America's zombie consumers could be more problematic for the U.S. than the zombie corporates were for the Japanese economy. At 70% of GDP, U.S. personal consumption is 3.5 times the peak share of Japan's bubble-distorted business capital spending sector in the early 1990s. A failure to learn the lessons of Japan, especially that of post-bubble zombie congestion, leaves the U.S. and the global economy in a very tough place for years to come. Growth-hungry financial markets could be very disappointed. Meanwhile, talk continues between Republicans and Democrats on raising the debt ceiling as the August 2nd deadline approaches. It's a game of Russian roulette. But there were some hints of good news this week, really. Like the price of oil fell to $93 after finishing the prior 5 weeks at either $99 or $100, so consumers may catch a break. And the Senate voted 73-27 to end tax credits and trade protection for the ethanol industry. I mean, this was a very significant measure. As Senator John McCain said, quote, "It is time to say enough is enough. This industry has been collecting corporate welfare for far, far too long." Only one problem: the measure has little chance of becoming law because it is part of a larger bill that is likely to fail, but a marker has been set. Congress can do the right thing, and ethanol's future is now in major question. Plus, in a separate agriculture spending bill, farm subsidies are slated to be cut to the tune of $2.7 billion. Great. And then on Friday came word that the AARP is changing its long-held stance on Social Security. Now, the Organization of Old People, hey, I've got my own card myself these days, is amenable to exploring benefit cuts for the first time, which is hugely significant given AARP's lobbying power. So maybe there is hope after all. Maybe our elected representatives finally get it. Just as importantly, will the American people truly get it as well? The Dow Jones and S&P 500 broke their 6-week losing streaks, barely, as the Dow gained 0.4% to 12,004, while the S&P picked up a point, or less than 0.1%, to 1271. NASDAQ, which was on a 4-week losing streak, extended it to 5, in losing 1%. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday. In the meantime, go to stocksnews.com, click on Week in Review. Happy Father's Day. Have a good one.